Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The past 6.5 decades, the country has focused heavily on building in the suburbs. The communities around Boston, for instance, inside of Route 495 and Route 128. But we've reached the point, perhaps, of peak sprawl.
That's the conclusion of a new report, which finds that Boston is on the cutting edge of a renaissance that puts a premium on walkable urban areas.
Now, this trend has big implications, not just for downtown, but for suburbs, too. Over the next generation, researchers say the development of urban spaces could be an engine of economic growth on par with the boom that came with suburbanization.
In studio with us are two of the men behind this report, Christopher Leinberger, director of the Center for Real Estate and Urban Analysis at George Washington University. He's also the author of a new report, The Walk-Up Wake-Up Call, Boston. Thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
Also with us is Mark Drazen. He's executive director of the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, who helped compile this report. Welcome back to our program.
Thank you.
First, we want to say, listeners, you can join the conversation here. Is a more walkable Boston a good idea? Will it make for a better city? And what about the suburbs? Call us with your thoughts, your comments at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Chris, I want to start with you. This report says that Metropolitan Boston is on the leading edge of a national shift toward walkable urbanism. What does that mean?
Well, it means that we're investing the 35% of the country's wealth that's in real estate and also in infrastructure in a different way than we have for 60 years. For 60 years, we invested it in low density places that you had to drive everywhere, and now the market wants higher density places that there's a lot of transportation options. You can get there by car, by truck, by rail, by Segway, by bicycle, but once you're there, it's walkable, mixed use, higher density. That's what the market wants. That's why we're seeing these huge price premiums.
But we've been hearing about the renaissance of cities for quite some time. What's different here?
What's different is that it's not just cities. It is the urbanization of the suburbs. And so we identified 57 walkable urban places that play a role in your regional economy. And those 57 places are gaining market share as far as office, hotel, rental apartment growth in this region. And they're getting dramatic price premiums on a price per square foot basis as far as their valuations. So price premiums are an indicator that the market wants you to build more, that there's pent-up demand.
Mm-hmm. And let's say we should define a walk-up, because we hear about that in the report quite a bit. What is a walk-up?
Walk-up is a regionally significant place that is walkable by its very nature. They average in size in this region 300 acres or so. And that's defined by the walkability of, you know, we all want to walk about 1,500, 3,000 feet before we change modes. We get into a car, do something different. And so that's the governing factor on the size. And these are places that our wealth is created, that your, you know, major job centers, urban universities, innovation districts. These are the places where you create the wealth, which is the reason that metropolitan Boston exists.
Hmm. And give me examples of walk-ups in greater Boston.
Well, certainly, you know, downtown, the CBD is certainly one. The Seaport is an emerging downtown adjacent walk-up, obviously Back Bay. Here we are in BU, which is a urban university, Harvard Square, Kendall Square. But then you've got the emerging ones that you're just touching on, things such as Assembly Row in Somerville. Mm-hmm. Very important for you, because this is the first time you've taken a brownfield and added a T-stop, and all of a sudden you've got a great walkable urban place overnight. And that's the first of 9 phases of Assembly Row. And it's great for the tax base of Somerville. It's going to bring a lot of young people to Somerville.
You know, I read an interesting statistic in this report that said since 2000, the year 2000, the Boston metropolitan area added about 52,000 people under the age of 34. So when we're talking about these walkable spaces, are we talking about really young people fueling this growth in these places and demanding this sort of walkable urban area for the most part?
It's certainly the primary driver. This is the millennials driving this. So baby boomers, you're in the back seat for the first time in your life, in my life. And so, yes, it's young people and it's educated young people. But one of the things that this research shows is that the high education level of Boston, your third highest in the country, is driving more walkable urbanism. And in turn, it's driving higher GDP. The most walkable urban metros in the country are also doing the best economically. In fact, the most walkable metros, the six most walkable, have a 41% higher GDP per capita than the least walkable places like Orlando and Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an economic development aspect to this.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, you mentioned innovation districts, but those are not walk-ups.
Yep.
So tell me the difference there, right?
Innovation districts are the economic driver of selected walk-ups like Seaport, like Kendall Square. Downtown's being driven by professional services and finance. So each has, you know, the universities are being driven by universities. So each of these walk-ups have their own economic set of drivers that make them function. So the innovation districts is just one example of an economic driver of these walk-ups.
Mm. Mark Drazen, I want to get you on the conversation. This report also had another interesting statistic saying that there's been a significant decline in single-family permits, which sort of shows what's going on here. And there's a prediction that almost two-thirds of housing demand in the coming decades in Greater Boston will be for multifamily units.
That is correct. That's part of the projections that we've done, that we do every 4 years as part of the federal transportation planning process. People's preferences have really changed. Young people particularly, but not exclusively. We see that people tend to be moving to apartments or to condominiums more frequently. They are willing to stay longer. They drive later in life. A lot of the senior citizens that are leaving single-family homes, so they don't move to Florida, but they do move to Boston. A lot of people say that when they retire, they want to live in the city. So while it is absolutely driven by young people, as Chris indicates, it's not young people alone. Right. Overall, there are preferences that people want to live in places that are denser, where uses are nearby. They don't want to have to drive everywhere. It used to be 20, 30, 40 years ago, people wanted to live in one place, work in another place, go to school in a third place. That's just not the kind of preferences we see these days. And so enlightened municipal officials are trying to create precisely the kind of neighborhoods that Chris spoke about.
Right. But what does that do in terms of prices? If really two-thirds of the housing is then going to shift to multifamily housing, and we're talking about urban areas, and this is where the wealth is going to be, and the jobs are going to be, demand is going to go. And doesn't that further divide what we're already seeing?
One of the very important things we have to do in adapting to this shift is to avoid displacement to the greatest degree possible.
And how?
And make this change useful to the people who currently live in those neighborhoods. One of the most important things to do in that regard is to simply build a lot of what's demanded. One of the reasons that housing prices in these walkable locations and also elsewhere in the greater Boston region are so high, why rents continue to increase throughout the Great Recession in this metro, is because we simply don't build enough housing. We have restrictive covenants. We have zoning that doesn't allow multifamily. We have permitting processes that go on for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, at the end of which you get another maybe. And gradually, I think people are understanding, particularly on the municipal level, certainly on the state level, that we have to change that equation. We have to build the kind of housing that people are demanding in places where it's possible throughout the Metro Boston region.
Okay. I want to take a caller here. Amy is calling from Sudbury. Amy, you're on the air.
Hi. I live in Sudbury, which is not a walkable suburb, but I live near Concord, Maynard, Hudson, and Marlborough. And I wonder what you have to say about making those walkable urban spaces, because they already have the businesses, the sidewalks. They need kind of the the apartment density, maybe.
So how do we make the Sudburys walkable?
Well, I would note, if I could start with Marlboro, because my agency has recently been doing a project with the city of Marlboro to try and revitalize their downtown. Mm-hmm. And a critical thing to say there, and which the mayor has really been supportive of, is that the development in that area has to include housing, not just commercial. And in fact, one of the critical ways to strengthen the commercial base is to bring more people in who will then use those stores and services. And Chris touched on this earlier. Urban does not just mean Boston. It doesn't just mean Boston, Cambridge, and Somerville. There can be an urbanized location, a center, a town village, a commercial district, in almost every suburban community. It may not reach the heights of an Assembly Square or an innovation district in Boston, but it can certainly provide, on a suburban setting, the kind of a place that people are really looking for these days.
And one of the things that people up here shy away from is apartments. They hate apartments because heaven forbid that somebody who's not a rich homeowner will move in and wreck my schools. That's the big issue.
Are you talking about Boston?
I'm talking about Boston. Boston I know and love. And you're very smart, but you're very provincial.
Oh, yeah.
And so these towns, though, there's a fabulous model called Arlington, Virginia. If you want to understand the urbanization of the suburbs, you must understand Arlington. They have 10% of their land is high-density walkable urban. 25 years ago, that land was producing 20% of their tax base and falling as the big boxes were leaving and the car dealers were moving out to the freeway. They've tripled the density. The tax base now in that 10% is 55% of their tax base. Half of that was housing. The apartments and condos that they've built, tens of thousands of, these people have moved in, and they don't generate school-age kids, as it turns out. They have a 1/13th the school-age child generation rate of a single-family home. But they pay school taxes. So the schools in Arlington, which speak 30 different languages, this is a middle-income
and well-regarded.
Phenomenal school, because they've got resources coming from that 10% of their land. They've shifted their tax base. And, oh, by the way, the other interesting thing, people also say, what about the traffic? The main drag in Arlington is called Wilson Boulevard. They've tripled the density in the last 25 years. The absolute traffic counts have gone down. Because everybody's walking and taking bikes.
Well, let's talk about transportation, because after this winter, how can we not, right? We had a complete meltdown of the MBTA. We're going to, I understand, have free fare day in May, some sort of compensation to riders because of what happened during the horrible winter. But what does that meltdown say about our ability to deal with this renaissance,
well,
if you will?
I think one of the things that it says is we have to pay some attention to our transit system. Our transit system is the goose that laid the golden egg. It is the generator of wealth, of interest, of people wanting to develop all along the spokes of the main MBTA lines. I have to say that I feel what happened to the MBTA during this incredible snowstorm, month-long snowstorm, was pretty much what many of us have been predicting for a long time, because we are severely underinvested in the system. Fortunately, unlike many of the systems in other parts of the country, ours is a system that serves the city very well, and then it goes out to the inner ring suburbs as well. It's not strictly a commuter system, so it has tremendous potential if we will invest in it properly. And the great return that we get from that is that people want to actually build homes and apartments and condominiums and businesses and locate institutions wherever the T is. When people come into my agency and ask, what is a good place to build in Greater Boston, the single thing they're most interested in is the T there? Is it accessible? Is there decent service? But we need to protect that investment. We can't let this happen again.
Right. And by the way, the government revenues for these 57 walkable urban places, 75% of those 57 places are rail transit served. And B, that the tax revenues generated per acre in a walkable urban place is 12 times that of a regional mall or business park, 12 times per acre.
We want to get a couple of more calls in. Listeners, you can join the conversation. More walkable Boston, a more urban suburb. What's the answer? Join us by calling 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Dave is calling from Somerville. Dave, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I keep hearing about Assembly Square as this model of new urbanism, but the millennials who are going to move there, how are they going to afford the $2,000 studio apartments? I mean, that's the cheapest apartment in that area.
Okay. Well, let's take that to Chris. You had mentioned
Assembly Square. One of the things that we did in this study is that we both looked at the economic performance of these walkable urban places and the social equity. Social equity defined as accessibility, affordability, and opportunity. This is the only social equity metric, I believe, that's ever been developed that is place-based. And so we evaluated all 57 on both the economic performance and on the social equity. And as you would expect, the better economic performance, it drove down social equity. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, one of our recommendations out of this is a conscious social equity strategy for each one of these places, to avoid the displacement of in the existing locations, or create a place that's a mixed income place as well. And it can be done. We have models throughout the country. It's a matter of the intention to do it, and really having the public will to make those mixed income places. By the way, in the past, 100 years ago, when everything was walkable urban, it was always mixed income. Mm-hmm. I have a great shot in Georgetown of an 1880s mansion across the street from 1880s row houses, 15-foot wide row houses. It's conceivable that the banker who built the mansion had the carpenters live across the street from him. Hmm. That was the way it was.
And one of the things that is absolutely essential, in my opinion, we see this in Somerville, for example, Boston and Cambridge also have policies like this, is that when you come in and develop market rate housing, you either have to build a certain percentage of affordable units, or you have to build those units elsewhere in the community, or you have to contribute to the city's overall fund to build affordable housing. It's absolutely essential that we make those requirements. They shouldn't only be in a few communities in the greater Boston region.
Should
they
be
should be virtually everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's really essential from a social equity perspective.
And I'll go back to what Mark had said, is that the long-term answer is build more supply. 70% of the reason why that apartment is $2,000 per month, 70% of it is because of land prices. And that's, you have 5.6% of your land being walkable urban. Why not make it 8% of your land walkable urban? And it'll drive down the land prices.
So the whole notion of folks, while there may have been a time when there were a lot of mixed income folks living together in urban areas, there was also the notion of folks leaving because it's cheaper. I mean, right now, the reason that people move out of Boston is because it's less expensive to live outside of Boston.
That's
you
a
get
myth.
More house for less money.
That's a myth.
It's a myth.
That if you look at it just upon housing, yes. If you look at it as housing and transportation, the second highest category of household spending in any American household budget is transportation. And there are drivable suburban households that are spending 25, 35, 40% of their household budget on a fleet of cars to participate in society. If you drop one car out of your household budget, you can increase your mortgage capacity by $150,000.
And that's why when we talk about affordability today, the affordability of location, you have to add in housing price or housing cost and transportation cost. In most people's budget, housing is the biggest item, but transportation is usually number two, unless your kids are in college.
Let's get some callers in here. Bruce is calling from Kendall Square. Bruce, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. This is just a comment. I've been in Kendall Square for 30 years since it was affordable. And a small townhouse community. Townhouses in the neighborhood now, 1,300 square feet, are going for $700,000. There are a lot of restaurants that have developed in Kendall Square, but there's no real nightlife. There's no pedestrian traffic. It was developed as a complete R&D project. And I'm just really looking for a comment in terms of both the affordability as well as the mixed-use urban design that you've been talking about that just doesn't seem to have happened. I'm not a particular fan aesthetically of Assembly Row in Somerville, but the idea is right. There is parking on the street, which generates a certain turnover in traffic. One doesn't have to use a parking lot. The architecture is somewhat mixed. And, I think overall that's going to be a success. But, I'm just seeking your comments, that's all.
All right. Chris,
keep in mind that Rome wasn't built in a day. And so, you know, the joint venture between Forest City Enterprises and MIT, which is really the driver of Kendall Square, is, you know, it's only been in place about 10 years. And so it has obviously evolved a lot. A lot more needs to happen. The affordability question is that you just don't, it goes back to what we talked about before, you don't have enough Kendall Squares. So it drives up the price of the few places that walkable urban projects are going.
Okay. We're just about out of time, unfortunately. We are going to have to wrap up the conversation, but I want to say Christopher Lineberger, director of the Center for Real Estate and Urban Analysis at George Washington University, the author of a new report, The Walk-Up Wake-Up Call Boston. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Also, Mark Drazen, executive director of the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, which helped produce this report. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, traditional Irish music and Yiddish folk tunes come together in the duo Saints and Sodics. I'm Deborah Becker with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.